The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
And we're back with the first 2015 edition of the Talk Security Podcast. It's episode, I actually have no idea which episode it is. Do you, Chris?
You're asking me if I'm counting? No.
it's hard to say which episode it is. We switched from an old name at some point. We'll just, we're just not going to number these episodes. Anyway, as always, I'm here with my colleague, Chris Brook. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Good to be
here. How were your holidays?
Festive.
Mine as well. Let's jump right into this bad boy. We got about five things to go over today. I went and saw that movie Black Hat on Friday, Chris, and I wrote a review about it. Have you made it to the theater to watch that yet?
I can't say I'm in a big rush. Other Oscar nominated films more worthy, I feel like, right now.
Yeah, I
I feel like I got the gist of it just from the commercials, a lot of scrolling code and views of keyboards being clicked and clacked .
The full length feature preview kind of told the whole story there. I'm not a member of the Academy, but I don't think it's going to win any awards.
I don't think it's up for any awards.
No. Well, it's very early for that. I don't think. I mean, wouldn't this be for next year's award? Why are we even talking about this movie as if it's going to be involved in any Oscar consideration? It wasn't good.
It was proficient in its hacking, though. Correct. Its portrayal of hacking.
They must have hired somebody. I've heard. I'm not even going to speculate.
Kevin Poulsen, right?
Yeah, that's what I've heard. So clearly Kevin Poulsen knows what he's talking about, and they actually did do a pretty good job, but they kind of just plagiarized off of what happened with Stuxnet. Like, it was all about, sending malware to a programmable logic controller and, spinning a pump out of control.
Yeah.
That was what the whole movie was about.
I wonder if Kim Zetter's seen it yet.
I would be interested to see what she had to say about it. Mm. So, as always with hacker movies, the main character hacker is really good looking and he shoots a gun and beats people up. So it's sort of ridiculous just from the outset. And also there's this one character who's supposed to be a network engineer. And she's obviously an attractive Chinese woman who's brothers with a Chinese man who's friends with the main character. And she serves no purpose in the movie other than Michael Hemsworth, Thor's love.
Isn't it Liam?
Is his name Liam?
I think it's Liam.
I don't know.
There are two Hemsworth. We're really getting the minutiae here.
Super deep into this. At any rate, there's a character who serves no purpose. There's another character. There's two guys who are Chinese military guys, and they both look exactly alike. So at one point, one of them gets shot in the throat and dies. And you think it's... I thought it was the more important of the two characters, and I was like, well, they kind of breezed right through that, and then 30 minutes later he shows up again, and I was like, wait a minute, what is going on here? So anyway,
it's Chris Hemsworth, for the record.
Chris Hemsworth. Either way, all the last 2 minutes of this are unimportant. If you haven't seen the movie yet, don't go see it. I would recommend, if it pops on TV, give it a watch. Anyway, to the real news. So obviously there's been a ton of stuff that's happened since we last had a podcast. I think our last one was in late December, and then we took sort of a long holiday break, and now we're back. So we're not going to get into any of the North Korea Sony stuff for the most part, but there has been this little tiff between Google and Microsoft about bug disclosure. Now essentially what happened is, as you know, Google has a 90-day bug disclosure policy. So they find a bug, as soon as they report it to the vendor who's responsible for fixing the bug, that's day one. So 90 days after that, they automatically disclose the bug. So this happened with a Microsoft bug. And it just so happened that the bug went public like 2 days or 3 days before Microsoft's January Patch Tuesday, where they fixed the bug. Mm-hmm. So Microsoft obviously got, you know, rather upset about this. Then, sure enough, Google published a second bug a few days later. So it's sort of, it would seem to the uninitiated that Google is sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Sort of antagonizing Microsoft here.
Yeah, they're a little, they're both a little peeved at each other.
Yeah, but I mean, so Microsoft's stance is, it's an old debate. It's a debate that's been going on since before either you or I were in any way involved in computer security. And it's basically Google believes in full disclosure or public disclosure, and Microsoft believes in what it calls responsible disclosure, which is you wait until the vendor fixes the bug and then you publish the details of it. Mm-hmm. But it's so it seems like Google's doing this antagonistically, but we both have read the reviews, and it's like there's no human in charge of what's going on over at Google. It's just a robot. Do you have the quote in front of you?
Oh, gosh, I don't.
Oh, I have it right here. It says so. All right, so if you look at the disclosure deadline for this bug, or a different one, rather, you know, it starts 90 days earlier, and after the 90 days is up, there's a note on the bug disclosure page that says, deadline exceeded, automatically de-restricting. So it's like, I mean, it's like a robot anyway. So, I mean, I understand why Microsoft would be upset, that they published a bug 2 days before Google, before Microsoft is going to fix it. But I mean, this is pretty clear that this is the way that Google handles bug disclosure.
And Microsoft, I mean, a lot of people have said, or it's kind of set in its ways. They've been doing this for a good 10, 12 years, whatever it's been. And they, I don't know, it really shows how fast Google, how their turnaround is. They will fix things and issue an update to Chrome like that. So.
Yeah, Rob Graham, who's works at Erratasec, said basically Microsoft, you know, started this whole bug disclosure thing 10 years ago, and they have their way that they do it, and their way is labor intensive. So, you know, they can wait until the vendor fixes the bug because it's all just humans working on it, whereas Google is automating all of this stuff. So, like, their policy is 90 days. Once that 90 days is up, the bug's going live. So it's kind of like, you know, Google's new age way of looking at it versus Microsoft's sort of, you know, arguably antiquated way of looking at it. Mm-hmm. But it will, I mean, seeing that this has happened twice now in the first month of the year, it's going to be a great time watching this play out in perpetuity.
Yeah, I was however, gonna say, it happened again just last week too. I'm sure.
So there was a third one.
That's what you're referring to.
Yeah, I think they released two more bugs. So the first one was like early this month, and then the second one was a bit later. So that's sort of a bit of a wonky subject. Now I think the best hacking story we've had so far this year is Sammy Kamkar's $10 USB charger that can record keystrokes over the air.
This was really cool.
Yeah, so I guess he built this little USB charger. So like the piece of it that you would plug into the wall, and into that you would plug a USB cord and then plug that into whatever you're trying to charge. So he put I think it was a little GMS circuit board in there, I want to say. Either way, it basically
it was a microcontroller. It was an Arduino, which
an Arduino microcontroller.
A lot of people really nerd out about and tinker and, you know, to their heart's content, and you can do a lot of different things with them. But
yeah, and they're super cheap. Mm. So he said when you plug this thing into a wall socket, it's called Key Sweeper, by the way. It'll connect automatically to a nearby Microsoft wireless keyboard and passively snip and decrypt all of the keystrokes and send them back to the operator. So one of the really cool, so it's obviously it's pretty cool that the thing is sniffing out keystrokes in real time, but it's not just taking like a crazy exhaustive record of all of this. It's looking for certain entries. Like if you're on a bank
website, it'll send an SMS saying, like, to give the person who owns the thing a heads up, like saying, hey, this person's on, you know, tdbank.com or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and that was just it. I can't remember any of the other ones offhand, but that was just one of like the features that it has. It actually had a whole bunch of ones that it could, a whole bunch of like, you know, keywords that it would pull off of the device as it was typing. And I think it works. I'm fairly certain that it works for Bluetooth and wireless keyboards. And Camcar said he just bought the Microsoft keyboard at Best Buy, like the cheapest one, and it appears to be like one of the most popular ones that Microsoft sells. So that's definitely, I think, I don't know where he presented this at. Did he present it at 31C3, or was did he just do this for fun?
I think he just did it for fun.
Yeah, so that's a really cool story. These are some of the more fun things to write about, are these sort of novel hacks that we see pop up every once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, he just released it on the 12th on his website,
Yeah, on his own website.
and then he released the source code on GitHub and was basically just like, "Hey, PayPal me $10," and it's really it. It is pretty neat.
Yeah, it's very cool. From that to kind of more of a bummer story, and I think you wrote about this, was the whole Lizard Squad DDoS for hire service that was, I mean, I guess that they've been using it for a lot, but it came to prominence because of all the attacks over the holidays on Xbox Live and the PlayStation Network.
Yeah, you probably noticed this. You're a gamer, Brian, right?
I play a bit of Xbox in my a bit of Xbox Live in my spare time. In fact, I just got an Xbox One, and when I first tried to log on to it was not working. And I
Over
didn't
oh,
realize,
was this
like,
over the holidays?
yeah, so with the first Xbox, with the Xbox 360, you could like still play your video games. And I'm antisocial to the point where like I don't even need to get online to play my video games. I'm like perfectly content to just play my video games by myself. But you have to have an online connection for the most part to even play the Xbox One. So, you know, I didn't get all bent up about it, but it was definitely, I could understand how some people were probably furious about them attacking the Xbox Live.
So basically, the behind the hack here is both those hacks stemmed from a DDoS for hire website called Lizard Stressor that was operated by the hacking group Lizard Squad. And this botnet, more or less, basically recruited a bunch of home routers that used really poor factory default credentials. Admin, admin 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, stuff like that. And it recruited those home routers as part of the botnet to DDoS those services. So.
And that's crazy because like everybody's home router, unless you're me or you or someone who thinks about this stuff, that's your credentials. Like
Yeah.
unless you've physically gone in and changed them, or sometimes they used to have like install wizards that you'd plug a CD into your computer and it would like automatically change all of that. But most people just get that stuff set up by like your Comcast technician and that password never changes.
Yeah, I mean, I think mostly people who buy them in stores are guilty of that. I don't know. I had my cable provider come by a few months ago when I moved, and they actually had me, they're like, "Oh, pick a somewhat challenging password. Pick a, just pick a password."
See, my Comcast, I just had a Comcast technician come out last week, and we were talking about like how to optimize my router speed, and he actually kind of knew what he was talking about. And he was like, giving me instructions on how to log into my router, and I was like, I obviously know how to do this. And he was like giving me the password, and he was surprised that I had changed it because he said most of the time he can just log into people's routers once he's on their networks. But they arrested someone in this instance, did they? Actually, before we go on to that, I just want to endorse one thing. I don't want to endorse Lizard Squad for what they're doing, but I do really love the name Lizard Squad.
It's an interesting hacking. I
It's
mean,
definitely an interesting name for a hacking group.
yeah, it's a good one. They've got their own rap song too.
Oh, they have a rap
They
song?
have a rap song that they commissioned somebody to write. It's
Anyone we've heard of? Okay.
no, unfortunately not.
It's like Talib Kweli.
It would be bizarre. So basically, they've been touting this stressor site that anybody can go on and anybody can use to DDoS anybody else, basically. But they did arrest somebody in relation to this. I think it was last week.
Yeah, an unnamed man in Southport in the UK. An 18-year-old. So he was arrested. Allegedly, he's alleged to have been connected to the DDoS attacks on the PlayStation Network and Xbox Live. As far as I know, they didn't release much information about the case.
No, they've arrested a handful of affiliates. Revolving around this, they arrested another person from the UK at the end of December, and they charged. I think they charged him with taking down 8chan and Krebs's site.
Well, yeah, he's also allegedly involved in a swatting incident, which I don't. Have we ever talked about swatting on this show? Do you even know what that is?
I don't think I have.
Okay, yeah. So swatting, and I only know about this because it apparently happened to Brian Krebs. Swatting is when you spoof an emergency phone call from someone's house and you get the SWAT team to come and break into the house because they think there's a home invasion going on. So some hackers did that to Brian Krebs like 2 years ago. He talked about it at Black Hat, I think. And I know he has a heck of a time with these Lizard Squad guys. They have no love for Brian Krebs, so I'm not sure if that's related or not. But apparently this kid was involved in some sort of swatting incident. Had you ever heard of that before?
No, I don't think I had.
It's pretty wild. So apparently Krebs was like at his house one night, and of course I only know this secondhand, but a SWAT team came and broke in, and he had no idea what was going on. And they were like, oh, there was like an emergency call from your house.
Yeah. That's another level for me.
Yeah, way, way above our level. All right, so from there back to a bit of Google. Google made a bit of a splash this week, saying that they're no longer going to provide WebView patches. So what do you know about WebView, Chris?
As far as I know, WebView is basically the technology that helps render websites for the Android browser. So basically, yeah, anything you view on the web that isn't in an app, I think, is via that technology.
Yeah, so they, when I first read this, I was like, this is crazy. So what they're basically doing is WebView was the website, you know, viewing tool used in, I think, Android Jelly Bean, which is version 4.0 to 4.3 and earlier. So in later versions of Google or of Android, they've moved to a new version. It's not a new version of WebView. They're just using the Chromium code base now. So WebView is no longer even involved. So basically Google's like, we don't want to fix that anymore. We're only going to provide fixes for, you know, the newer versions of it. So I think that would be version KitKat and above.
I don't know.
You're my go-to guy on these wacky Android versions.
Yeah, more or less.
But I think it's basically anything before 4.4 isn't getting updates to WebView, and apparently it's already riddled with vulnerabilities that researchers at Rapid7 and other places have been calling out Google for. So a lot of people are pretty peeved about that. We're getting pretty close to 20 minutes here. Why don't we jump into CES? Chris, you got anything to say about CES whatsoever? That CES is the Consumer Electronics Show?
Yeah, that's the big show in Vegas every year that, you know, all the new technology comes out at. Not much. I mean, basically, the FTC came out and said that they were advocating for the Internet of Things privacy and security by design. So basically just baking in default things that would protect people online, and which is a plus, but that was...
Yeah, does the FTC have power to move the multi-billion-dollar industry that's driving CES toward better protection of privacy?
Oh, of course not. It's pretty much just like like a fly, you know, whispering something into somebody's ear.
Honestly, I couldn't even... I wrote that FTC story. Full disclosure, I did not go to CES, but I wrote that story, and I was like, I read the whole press release, and like, I had everything written, and all I wanted to do was figure out what time she spoke at, and I couldn't even find on the CES website like where the FTC had spoken, when, what time, like what kind of talk it was.
probably just weighed down in advertisements for drones and tablet
exactly.
watches, right?
Yeah, I imagine that they like pushed her into a corner of a hallway somewhere and like made her talk for like 15 minutes and then kicked her out. All right, well I think that's about everything we had to cover today. We should have one more of these around the end of the month, beginning of next month, and then the middle of next month. I think we'll probably have a bunch of these because we're all going out to the Security Analyst Summit, which is basically Kaspersky Lab's security conference in Cancun. So I will talk to you probably before then, Chris, and then I will see you there.
Sounds good.
All right, talk to you later.
Alrighty.
The road to crime ends in a trap that justice sets. Crime does not pay.
Talk Security Podcast is brought to you by Kaspersky Lab, the world's largest privately held provider of internet security solutions for businesses and consumers.